LaHood warns controllers of a zero-tolerance policy. NATCA's president calls sleeping controllers isolated incidents. And a hacker gets flight prep customer information. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, April 18th, 2011. After something like the seventh confirmed or suspected sleeping controller incident to come to light within a month, U.S. Transportation Secretary Ray LaHood yesterday announced a zero-tolerance policy. Quote, "Safety is our top priority, and we will continue to make whatever changes are necessary," unquote. Among the initial changes mentioned is scheduling a minimum of 9 hours off between shifts and prohibiting controllers from intentionally mixing shifts to create a 3-day weekend at the expense of adequate rest. FAA Administrator Randy Babbitt and NATCA union reps, accompanied by senior staff, start their roadshow today in Atlanta and say they'll listen to controllers about rest-related issues and stress in return the importance of staying awake. But some in the industry are rolling their eyes at the idea that this problem is a recent development or somehow a surprise to the FAA. Rick Pearl, who at one time was an instructor at FAA's Academy for New Controllers in Oklahoma City, tells ABC News, quote, "It has always been a problem. There is no way you can get off at 2 p.m. in the afternoon and be back at 10 p.m. at night and get decent sleep," unquote. Ed Jeska, a former FAA inspector in the Alabama FISDO, who is a vocal critic of the FAA's handling of safety concerns, wrote in his blog over the weekend, quote, "The issue that should be frustrating and irritating Mr. LaHood is how he has been blindsided by these events, if in fact he has. As long as Mr. LaHood, Mr. Babbitt, and others in the chain condone and support the destruction of whistleblowers, exposing these anomalies will be a challenge to those simply wanting to improve aviation safety," unquote. NATCA President Paul Rinaldi has praised a move announced Thursday by Babbitt and LaHood to increase staffing on overnight shifts at 27 airports around the country. The move came after the resignation of ATC Chief Hank Krakowski, following a growing number of incidents in which controllers have been caught or admitted sleeping while on the job on overnight shifts in control towers. Rinaldi issued a statement that reads in part, quote, "We are fully committed to providing the safest and most professional services possible. The increased staffing implemented by Secretary LaHood and FAA Administrator Babbitt is a strong first step that will go a long way to ensure these isolated cases of fatigue never happen again," unquote. An email forwarded to ANN by a reader indicates that Flight Prep has suffered a software security breach and personal data of some of its customers has been compromised. According to the email, the names, email addresses, and passwords of some customers were compromised by the hacker. Flight Prep Marketing Director Travis Cannon confirmed the breach to ANN in a telephone conversation Friday. He would not say how many customers have been affected. Cannon says the company has rewritten a lot of code to make it more secure. The company asks customers to change their Flight Prep passwords, as well as the password in any email, websites, or other applications that may have used the same login information combination. Flight Prep reminds users it will never ask for a credit card number or other personally identifiable information via email, and urges caution when opening links or attachments from unknown third parties. Reversing a previously announced decision, space shuttle managers now plan to keep Shuttle Endeavour's STS-134 mission to a 14-day flight, and possibly extend the mission as many as 2 days while Endeavour is in space. No reason was given for the change. The program had extended the mission 1 day last Wednesday. The first landing opportunity at Kennedy is now Friday, May 13th at 9:28 a.m. Eastern Time. Launch remains set for April 29th at 3:47 p.m. Up next on ANN, Avedine's EX600 MFD is approved in Europe. Hawker adds a second 400 XPR test aircraft. And the U.S. Navy funds 10 more E-2D Hawkeyes. You're listening to Aero News.
Freedom through innovation. It's what led us to develop Cirrus Flying 2.0, the framework for a bold new take on private aviation. And as a result, the gap between the aircraft we produce and those of our competitors continues to widen. Cirrus knows where the personal aircraft industry is headed. We're already there.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for April 18th. I'm Paul Platt. EASA has granted a European Technical Standard Order to Avodyne for its EX600 multifunction display. The ETSO allows installation in European registered fixed-wing aircraft and helicopters. Avodyne's EX600 uses a 5.8-inch diagonal 640 by 480 pixel VGA display and can display CMAX electronic approach charts and over 6,000 worldwide airport diagrams at no additional charge. It also supports European VFR charts covering 2,200 airports in 29 European countries. With interfaces to 20 different radar models, the EX600 can also act as a display replacement for many outdated and unrepairable cathode ray tube radar displays, while adding significant situational awareness and utility enhancements. The Hawker 400 XPR development program got a boost Thursday with the announcement by Hawker Beechcraft of the addition of a second aircraft to the test program to be used primarily to develop and certify various avionics upgrades. Global Customer Support Vice President Christy Tannehill explained, quote, "This additional aircraft allows us to engineer the program's optional avionics upgrade concurrently with the Williams International FJ44 4A engine integration. This will keep the momentum going on the certification in order to meet the growing demand from our customers," unquote. A number of variations of Rockwell Collins ProLine 21 avionics are planned for the Hawker 400 XPR. There's a baseline 3-display system or a more advanced 4-display system along with other enhancements. The U.S. Navy has authorized funding for an additional 10 E-2D Advanced Hawkeye aircraft following a Defense Acquisition Board review. The authorization comes just shortly after the Northrop Grumman Corporation-built E-2D made its first carrier landing aboard the USS Harry S. Truman. The review validates that the program is successfully executing cost and schedule requirements and is on track to enter initial operational test and evaluation later this year. The Navy's program of record is for a total of 75 aircraft, with deliveries through 2021. So far, Northrop Grumman has delivered 5 E-2Ds to the Navy, and production on the 10th aircraft recently began at Northrop Grumman's East Coast Manufacturing and Flight Test Center in St. Augustine, Florida. Bombardier Customer Services announced last week it's now offering repair capability for the CRJ-200, 700, and 900 at its Dallas repair facility. The company showcased its range of maintenance, repair, and overhaul services for commercial aircraft customers at MRO Americas, a show in Miami Beach, Florida. Following further investment in its repair and overhaul center, located southwest of Love Field Airport in Dallas, Bombardier can now provide CRJ repair for nacelle and flight control components. The investment includes a large rotable pool of parts, and included is support for the RB211E4 and IAE V2500 engines. Stephen Addis, general manager of Bombardier Customer Services Belfast, commented, quote, "We have been providing this CRJ capability at our repair and overhaul center in Northern Ireland for more than 15 years and are delighted to expand it to Dallas," unquote. Still ahead, airshow ticket prices are climbing to where they belong. Pilot list integration can move forward at Southwest and AirTran. And another member of the greatest generation has returned home. You're listening to Aero News.
Piperjet.
Pipermatch.
Global expansion.
Meridian, Mirage, Matrix, and more.
With so much happening at Piper, how can I possibly keep up?
Get informed. Get involved at facebook.com/piperaircraft.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3220.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, April 18th. I'm Paul Plack. A survey that will be published in the second quarter issue of Airshows Magazine indicates that adult ticket prices have increased an average of about $2 to $5 at the gate since the last survey was done in 2008. The poll of more than 100 event organizers shows the mean cost of an adult admission ticket purchased at the gate in 2011 will be $19.07. That's up from $13.98 in 2008. The median price for an adult on-site ticket will be $20. International Council of Airshows President John Cudahy observes, quote, "It appears that airshow event organizers now recognize that admission prices had been too low for many years. Average adult ticket prices are now approaching $20, and there are now a number of shows charging $25 per day," unquote. By comparison, the average ticket price for an NFL football game in 2010 was $76.47, and an NHL game ticket averaged $54.25. The average cost of a one-day admission ticket to a destination amusement park like Disney or Universal was $72.72, and regional amusement park adult tickets were $44.20 per day. The unions representing pilots at Southwest Airlines and AirTran Airways, and both companies, have signed a four-party process agreement. It provides for the two pilot groups to begin their seniority integration discussions prior to the legal closing of the AirTran acquisition. The agreement was signed on Thursday. Southwest anticipates closing before the end of the current quarter. The Southwest Airlines Pilots Association and the Airline Pilots Association can now begin the work of integrating seniority lists in accordance with the McCaskill Bond Act. The agreement also creates a timeline for an agreement which, if not met, will send the matter to arbitration. The Japanese airline Star Flyer has signed a firm contract with Airbus for the purchase of two A320s. The airline currently operates five leased A320s, with four more to be delivered. The new order is its first aircraft purchase. The cabin will feature 144 to 150 seats in a single-class layout, and the power plants are CFM56-5B4P engines. Star Flyer intends to use the new jets to increase frequencies and to open new routes in Japan and to Korea. The airline has been operating A320s since March of 2006. And finally today, it's bittersweet when modern forensic science identifies the remains of members of the Greatest Generation lost in World War II. Sweet in that it allows us to honor them, bitter in that entire generations didn't live to see closure. Army Air Force's 2nd Lieutenant Martin P. Murray of Lowell, Massachusetts, was buried Saturday in Marshfield, Mass. Murray was 21 years old when he, along with 11 other crew members, took off on October 27, 1943, in a B-24D Liberator from an airfield near Port Moresby, New Guinea. They were diverted by bad weather to another strip and disappeared for 60 years. In August 2003, a team from the Joint POW-MIA Accounting Command received information on a crash site from a citizen in Papua New Guinea, who also turned over an identification card from one of the crew members and reported that there were possible human remains at the site of the crash. Another team was able to successfully excavate the site from January to March of 2007, and found several identification tags as well as human remains. Dental comparisons and mitochondrial DNA confirmed the identity of Lieutenant Murray's remains. At the end of World War II, the U.S. government was unable to recover and identify about 79,000 Americans. In the decades since, only about 5,000 of those cases have been solved. It makes me proud to think that we still keep looking. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves tells us five things we should ask before choosing a flight school. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.